Oh, mate. I've actually done, like, my hip flexor in. So obviously there I am, taking ages to get here. Not only that, met a bloke named Sam on the tube, right? There I was like, Sam, mate, I need you to sing me a song about an iPhone. So Samsung. Anyways, what have you got for me today, Crimes?
Today we have the Chicago Tylenol murders. When Ooh. Seven people were poisoned with essentially paracetamol.
That sucks.
It's quite a sad story, and it happened in September and October of 1982. Did
you know, Chip, that there were over 100,000 articles written about this one particular case? That is how nationwide this case was. And some of you guys might even remember this if you were born ages ago.
On September 29th, 1982, seven people from Chicago died after consuming extra strength Tylenol. All seven victims had similar circumstances surrounding their deaths, especially the last three who died on the same day in the same house. This led investigators to test out the Tylenol. The investigator, Nick Pishos, tested out the bottle from the Janus family and compared it with Mary Kellerman's bottle, which revealed that cyanide was present in the capsules. Both bottles contained the same control number, MC2880. The blood test results showed that the dose the victims took were way over the lethal levels of cyanide. Cyanide is also described as having a similar scent to almonds, which both bottles reportedly had.
The capsules in these bottles were manufactured in Pennsylvania and Texas. The police decided that the product had been tampered with after they had been placed on store shelves. The victims were harmed by a total of five bottles, but the police later found more contaminated ones on the shelves in Chicago. On the evening of October 1st, warnings were then posted and Tylenol were to be pulled from all the shelves. The parent manufacturer was a company that goes by the name Johnson & Johnson, and their subsidiary was McNeil Consumer Products, who also manufactured Tylenol. All Tylenol products were recalled. There were roughly 31 million bottles in circulation, with an average retail value of over $100 million, which is equivalent to roughly $270 million now. Following the recall, Johnson & Johnson put out a statement telling the public to stay away from products which said they contained paracetamol, as those seemed to be the bottles where the capsules were tampered with. They also offered $100,000 to anybody with information that would lead to the perpetrator. October 5th, all authorities, including the FBI, were tackling the case. Obviously, this news led to panic and chaos, and hospitals were filled with people worried that they had consumed this poisoned Tylenol. This also led to multiple copycats who tampered with pills but lacing them with rat poison or hydrochloric acid rather than the original cyanide. What the investigators didn't understand was that there was no connection or path they could follow. All the victims purchased their Tylenol products from different stores, and all these stores had factories. So how could one person lace so many bottles? The police concluded that whoever laced the pills must have done so one day prior to the murders, because if cyanide is left too long, it would have eaten through the actual capsules themselves. They opened labs where they could test these Tylenol bottles and ended up testing over 10 million pills. This led them to finding only 50 capsules which contained cyanide across eight different bottles. These bottles had no DNA on them.
Imagine you had taken one of those bottles or one of those pills recently. You would be terrified that you'd taken them, because I guess back then people maybe didn't realize that cyanide works pretty quickly. But could you imagine the anxiety you would have having taken one, or you've got a banging headache and all you want to take is like a paracetamol or a Tylenol, I suppose.
And obviously this is just, there'll be so many people who have taken it as well, because it's just, it's paracetamol, isn't it?
Yeah.
Everyone's taking it all day, you know.
at 3 this morning.
It would just be the top of the office, I guarantee.
Ain't no one buying any Tylenol anytime.
Well, they couldn't. They removed a lot of it from the shelves, as they should have done. And can you imagine testing literally millions of bottles and only finding 50 capsules? They must have felt like they were losing out on so much money just because one tricky little snob, yeah, has gone and ruined it for everyone. People couldn't deal with their hangovers because of one bloke.
So we need to figure out who's done this. Some leads. We need to talk about the leads.
All right.
Tyrone Farner, the Illinois State Attorney General, said that there were about 1,200 leads for this specific case alone.
Mate, that is so many people. Mm-hmm. How do you filter through that?
Well, initially they started looking at all the employees that worked for Johnson & Johnson, the ones that could possibly be upset and angry, previously worked in different places, stuff like that.
That's a good point, actually. I mean, I'm not, you know, credit to this guy. That is some forward thinking right there.
Well,
instantly find the disgruntled workers.
Maybe they got a pay cut.
And they're like, you know what? Screw this. Screw everyone that is taking Tylenol. I'm killing some people.
Well, they could pinpoint where the cyanide capsules came from, so they would check all the factories where they came from.
Were made,
and they would be like, oh, you know, is someone pissed? Paycheck didn't come in time.
Mm-hmm. An interesting tactic that the FBI actually ended up deploying was from an FBI analyst, John Douglas. Some of you guys may recognize that name. He is from Mindhunter, the Netflix series, and also the book as well. And he came up with the theory that the killer would want to visit the youngest victim's grave. So what he did was he put out the address. He put it out there into the public, and then he put it under 24-hour surveillance to see if the killer would visit the grave. Because we've spoken about it before.
That happens.
Yeah.
They do. They serial killers, murderers, they turn up at the graves, like, almost
They want to see their work. They want to see what they've managed
to do.
It's odd,
but it happens.
Exactly. But unfortunately, despite being under 24-hour surveillance, nobody turned up. But the good news is, there were some leads, and we want to talk about them.
Roger Arnold. Roger was someone who was identified and investigated for the Tylenol killings. He worked with one of the victim's fathers, Mary Reiner. Mary Reiner bought her pills across the street from Roger's wife's psychiatric ward. When police searched his home, they found how-to crime manuals and proof of chemical experiments, but the remnants were potassium carbonate. He refused to take a lie detector test. After all this, Roger had a breakdown, with all the attention on him, and for some reason blamed it on a bar owner, Marty Sinclair. Shortly after, in 1983, he shot someone who he believed to be Sinclair, but instead was a random person called John Stanisha. He was convinced Sinclair had turned him into the police. He was convicted in 1984 and served 15 years of a 30-year sentence for second-degree murder and died in June 2008.
One strange thing. But, I mean, it doesn't mean 100%, oh, this is a guy. But he did refuse to take a lie detector test. Is that because he's like, this shit's going to catch me out? Or
we have to also remember, though, that lie detector tests back then especially, they weren't that accurate. And it's one of the reasons why they've been scrapped now.
Yeah.
Is there was just too much error in them.
You can fake them.
Yeah, you can.
I know the tactics.
We should do that for an episode. The lie detector test on the fella's mysteries. Let us know if there are any YouTube mysteries you guys want us to cover with a lie detector test. Anyways, we're getting distracted. Let's talk Roger Arnold here. So did he know that lie detector tests were really inaccurate? And he was just there like, that's why I'm not doing it? Or was it more of an admission of guilt?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, or maybe he's just like, no, I refuse to do this because I shouldn't have to do this because I didn't do it.
Which is fair.
Which also could be the case.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. The how-to crime manual and stuff, I don't think that is that weird. Like, some people just genuinely interested in stuff like that.
And it wasn't the same, you know, it wasn't cyanide that they found either. It was a different chemical.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of things that don't really add up.
I mean, if you were practicing to use cyanide, things like that, surely you would be using that particular ingredient.
Right? Yeah.
And it seems like he wasn't there. I don't know. I think it was maybe just a bit of a coincidence that these two things happened. There just doesn't seem to be enough of like a hard connection.
Yeah, this Marty Sinclair as well. Like, he claimed it was him and then he tried to shoot him.
He dubbed him in or something?
But then he just shot the wrong person.
That is a top 10 howler. That is just so, so stupid.
The Unabomber. Now, in 2011, the FBI requested DNA samples from the Unabomber in connection to the Tylenol murders. but he denied ever possessing potassium cyanide. He knew Illinois very well, and his first bomb was actually in Chicago. There was another death which wasn't officially linked with the Tylenol case, but it was another cyanide poisoning located in Sheridan, Wyoming, and it was only around 2 months before the Tylenol murders. Now, it's important to note that Sheridan is on the way to the famous Unabomber's cabin. It could have been a white-collar crime to bring down the price of Johnson & Johnson's stock.
Not gonna lie, I love the fact that we've managed to wedge the Unabomber into potentially being a suspect here. That is literally one of my favorite cases of all time. And how insane would it be if he was also responsible for these Tylenol murders?
I don't know though, like, it would be crazy if he was, if he'd done the double whammy.
Yeah.
To massive cases and he's just...
He just has a knack for national panic and headlines.
I don't know though, it's just like, what, Sheridan's on the way to the Unabomber's cabin? Is that really enough to tie it to him?
Yeah, it's definitely a reach, right? And that's what I was thinking as well. And also just the fact that they claim that he knew Illinois quite well. I know
Illinois quite well.
You might be the Tylenol murder, to be fair. I get that he was doing quite a lot of stuff in and around Chicago, but remember, like, he was doing like bombs and stuff.
Yeah.
But he was extremely smart and extremely intelligent. I just feel as though it's just a bit random. Was there any letters sent that he sent out regarding this particular thing? I feel like he probably would have claimed it or something like that, but he never did.
I don't know.
I would love to be this be the case, I just think we're reaching. It's a big reach. What do you think, Jay?
I'm with you on that.
On October 6th, Johnson & Johnson received an unsigned letter which said, "Gentlemen, as you can see, it is easy to place cyanide, both potassium and sodium, into capsules sitting on store shelves. And since the cyanide is in the gelatin, it is easy to get buyers to swallow the bitter pill. Another beauty is that cyanide operates quickly. It takes so very little, and there will be no time to take countermeasures. If you don't mind the publicity of these little capsules, then do nothing. So far, I have spent less than $50, and it takes me less than 10 minutes per bottle. If you want to stop the killing, then wire $1 million to bank account number 84-49-597 at the Continental Illinois Bank, Chicago. Don't attempt to involve the FBI or local Chicago authorities with this letter. A couple of phone calls by me will undo anything you can possibly do." James William Lewis was accused of sending the letter as they found his fingerprints on it. But strangely enough, the bank account in the letter did not belong to Lewis, but belonged to Frederick Miller McKay. Frederick Miller was the old boss of James's wife. He had apparently taken $500 from James's wife, and so James wrote this letter with the aim of exposing the theft. James had previously been charged and acquitted of a murder, and in 1991 he was suspected for falsifying credit card applications. This led to a trial where in 2009 some court documents were released which showed that the Department of Justice investigators concluded Lewis was responsible for the poisonings despite the fact that they did not have enough evidence to charge him. Lewis continued to deny responsibility and was quoted, "If the FBI plays it fair, I have nothing to worry about." He was convicted of extortion, and although the police didn't have enough to charge him for the Tylenol murders, they could still charge him for the letter. He was sentenced to 20 years and served less than 13 years.
As you can see in this snapshot of the film, the guy in the background there appears to resemble James Lewis. The lady in the front left is one of the victims, Paula Prince. Apparently, James Lewis also had another 17 aliases. One of the theories is that James Lewis may have blamed Johnson & Johnson for his 5-year-old daughter's death. His daughter died of a heart disease in 1974, and it could have potentially come from the medication the girl was taking at the time.
I can't make my mind up if this guy just caught one of the biggest L's of all time because he was simply just trying to set up his wife's old boss, and he just ended up getting caught up in this massive case that
how can you be that stupid? How can you do this, make this whole letter and everything, and you're not even wearing gloves?
I know, that's what I'm saying. That's what makes me think this guy isn't smart enough
to do this
particular crime. Again, yes, in that photograph, there's someone that resembles James Lewis. Now, keep in mind, that might not actually be him, but it looks like him. And if it is him and he's looking at her buying it, it does make it seem a bit more reasonable. But was his plan this whole time to kill those seven people and then to set up Frederick Miller? Or like, did he really go that far to set him up to kill seven people? Is this like, surely you only need to kill one person to set
he managed to pull all that off, and then his downfall was leaving fingerprints on the letter. I don't know, but he did have there was a potential motive there, because
with his wife's ex-boss.
The speculation around the fact that Johnson & Johnson, his daughter was taking the medication from Johnson & Johnson.
And she died
whilst taking that.
Yeah, I mean...
But I mean...
Look, for me, either the motive is the daughter thing, or the motive is the wife's ex-boss.
Yeah, but I mean...
Right, that had apparently stolen from... But are you really going to kill seven people over having lost $511? Which, by the way, admittedly, back then... It was quite a bit more, but still.
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
I just don't think this guy did that.
That just sounds stupid. If he did do that, then he's...
He's actually stupid.
Yeah, moron.
So, like, obviously, the police had enough to charge him for the letter that he sent, but ultimately, they didn't have enough to charge him for the actual Tylenol murders. So, it could be none of these people, and that's the point that I'm saying, is that we've got three leads here, and none of them... I mean, really,
they look that strong. No,
there's no strong leads here.
Could be. It's probably someone completely different, just out there sipping a little whiskey.
Yeah.
Knowing that he pulled off this Tylenol murders, and he's like, "Damn, man, they can't catch me."
If it was James Lewis, then James Lewis is like the smartest and the most stupid person to be able to do this. Do you know what I mean? Like, the smartest to think up of putting the cyanide in the capsules, da da da. Like, that, there is a level of intelligence there. And then the intelligence just went out the window.
Out of the window.
Look, it didn't stop there, though, because unfortunately, there were copycats. Mm-hmm. Now, in January 2009, the Illinois police renewed the investigation and searched the home of James Lewis in Massachusetts. And they actually seized some items, right? The review was prompted by the recent 25th anniversary of this crime and the resulting publicity, okay? Further, given the many recent advances in forensic technology, it was only natural that a second look be taken at the case and recovered evidence. Because again, as I've said, they only got him on the letter. Nobody was done for the murders here. It is unsolved technically, right? And in 2010, he published a book called Poison, The Doctor's Dilemma, right?
A bit dodgy.
Yeah.
But I mean, I can't say it's dodgy because I haven't read the book. It could just be about him claiming complete innocence and how his life was ruined by poison or whatever, even though he...
Yeah, by him doing this letter.
He dubbed himself in by doing the letter and just leaving the fingerprints on it.
So
why don't you just go, why don't you wrap up the letter, you know, put it in an envelope. Why don't you just go and hand it into the police station whilst you're at it?
He pretty much did that, didn't he? But it did lead to copycats, like I said. Three more deaths occurred in 1986 with tampered gelatin capsules. Also, extra strength Tylenol was laced with cyanide, causing another death. And Procter & Gamble's Encoprin, also similar to like an aspirin, paracetamol type capsules, were recalled after a spiking hoax, which resulted in a sales drop. So people have obviously seen, like, look, if you want to mess up one of these pharmaceutical companies, tank their stock price, things like that, then you just need to do one of these things. Now, preferably it's a hoax and you don't actually kill the seven people. But yeah, this was obviously a way that people could hit back at Big Pharma.
And that resulted in companies inventing, you know, tamper-resistant packaging, you know, like induction seals, stuff like that, so.
More power to that. So if you've ever had one of them things, you see those seals on them, just know that it was probably because of this case right here, the Tylenol murders, right? The good news, I guess, if you had stocks in Johnson & Johnson, is that their share price did recover, supposedly. Anyways, a lot of people think that Johnson & Johnson dealt with the whole disaster really well. And the price did go down, but then only a year later, it was back up. So, if you did...
That's how you do company PR right there.
That business. Anyways, guys, that wraps up this particular case. Please let us know down below, what do you guys think? Because we think that there are three relatively weak leads here. I still think the person that did this is out there.
It's out there at large. And you guys could solve this case. But anyway, make sure to subscribe, follow us on Spotify as well, on YouTube, turn them notifications on, because we'll be back next Monday with another case.